And there was both. All right. 1 Samuel 28. So in those days, the Philistines gathered their forces for war to fight against Israel. And Achish said to David, "Understand that you and your men are to go out with me in the army." And David said to Achish, "Very well, you shall know what your servant can do." And Achish said to David, "Very well, I will make you my bodyguard for life." So, here's David's lie and the lie he's living coming to a head. He's going to have to, at this point now, he's going to have to make a choice. Either fight with the enemy of the Lord's people against his own people, which, can you imagine, at some point, if he was to ascend to the throne of Israel, this would kind of not be a recommendation that you would want to have. And then the other thing is he's got this person to trust him so much that he wants to make him his bodyguard, because that's how much the Lord's blessed David. And he kind of, everybody can kind of see that David's, the Lord's with David. But here, he has portrayed a false thing, and now there's another person that believes in him, but for all the wrong reasons. So that's sometimes when we get twisted up in lies and start living a false life, we can hurt other people, and things are going to get exposed eventually. Now Samuel had died, and all Israel had mourned for him and buried him in Ramah, his own city. And Saul had put the mediums and the necromancers out of the land. So, you know, that's kind of thrown in there just to plant a seed about what's going to happen. And everybody knows that the necromancer thing, right, is the people that talk to the dead and all that kind of stuff. So he's pretty much, he seems to have some things that he's willing to enforce. He has these moments of clarity, and he is an okay king, and in other times he just loses it. So the Philistines assembled and came and encamped at Shunem. And Saul gathered all Israel, and they encamped Abel greatly. So I gathered from that they're just saying that there's a lot of them camping out. So they're a big army. And when Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him either by dreams, by Urim, or by the prophet. So, I guess, I was thinking about this and so many times in your own. This is a very, very scary place to be, and I know I have been there where I felt like my prayers just went up to the ceiling in the room and hit that, didn't go any further, and I'm just not, and you know, sometimes it's just the Lord's just waiting and wanting you to press in and everything. But in this point, I think Saul's kind of, the Lord's kind of reached the end of the line with Saul. And you can see that, I'm assuming at other times, the Lord, so if you remember when Samuel left and Saul rent his garment, tore his garment, that he said, "You'll never see me again." So I don't know at times that Saul had sent word to him for other things, or the Lord had spoken to him by dreams, or you see they have the Urim and the Thummim, where I get the feeling that nobody really knows, surprisingly, that it's kind of like a dice thing that they casting lots and do something. So, you know, he's tried that. The Lord hasn't appeared to him in dreams. And by prophets, I would assume, if you remember, Saul had kind of started, we saw other prophets around when Saul was around, but Saul was like the head dude, and nobody else has come to him. Then Saul said to his servants, "Seek out for me a woman who is a medium, that I may inquire of her." And his servant said, "Behold, there is a medium at Endor." So, it's kind of funny that they said, and Saul had cleaned out everybody, you know, all made an attempt to clean out the medium, but his servants, there's always the black market, you know, there's always those people that are doing stuff off the books, and somebody knows about it. So here, you know, kind of people in Saul's own sphere of influence knew this was going on and just never told him. I don't know if it's somebody's relatives. You know, you could come up with a thousand reasons why not. And I found the guy. I haven't got an answer to this question, and my own. I don't know if there's, but it says, seek out for me a woman who is a medium. I don't know if there was a particular reason for that, or
maybe he already knew.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe he already knew, or he had somebody in mind when he brought this to bear. So Saul disguised himself and put on other garments and went. He and two men with him, and they came to the woman by night. And he said, divine for me by spirit, and bring up for me whomever I shall name you. It's kind of interesting, her reply is, the woman said to him, surely you know what Saul has done. He has cut off the mediums and the necromancers from the land. Why then are you laying a trap for my life to bring about my death? So here she's, I don't know, growing up, I remember always, everybody always said, you know, if you asked a narc if he was a cop, he had to tell you yes, and if he told you yes, he couldn't arrest you, or you knew. I just kind of funny here that she's like, you know, is this a trap? Is this, you guys are trying to get me to do something, and then you're going to kill me? And Saul's response is just amazing to me.
It is kind of like a check for him. Like, at one time, he had nothing to want to do with us, and kicked us out.
Right. And again, at this point, I don't think she knows it's Saul. So I kind of went back and just to understand this. So Leviticus 19:31 says, do not turn to mediums or necromancers. Do not seek them out, and so make yourselves unclean by them. I am the Lord your God. And in Deuteronomy 18:9-14, it's what's labeled in this of the abominable practices. When you come into the land that the Lord your God has given you, you shall not learn to follow the abominable practices of those nations. There shall not be found among you anyone who burns his son or daughters as an offering. And it's kind of interesting. I was watching this archaeology show, just I was talking earlier, and they have found the places in Israel where they were burning the children. That just hurts my heart, but that's just terrible. Anyone who practices divination or tells fortune or interprets omens or a sorcerer or a charmer or a medium or a necromancer or one who inquires of the dead. For whoever does these things is an abomination to the Lord, and because of these abominations, the Lord your God is driving them out before you. You shall be blameless before the Lord your God for these nations which you are about to dispossess. Listen to fortune tellers and to diviners. But as for you, the Lord your God has not allowed you to do this. So this is how, I just wanted to point out how important this is to God, that you not do this. And I guess Saul's gone so far off the rails that any guardrails in his life have been taken down. And just in desperation, he's now going to violate this, which obviously he knew because he tried to enforce it at one time. But now he's just reached the bottom, and I mean, obviously it says, so make yourselves unclean by them. So he is going to make himself unclean with this. But Saul swore to her by the Lord, as the Lord lives, no punishments have come upon you for this thing. So it's kind of funny, he's violating God's laws, but swearing on that same God that he's not going to do anything. So he's really wrapped around the axle at this point. Then the woman said, whom shall I bring up for you? And he said, bring up Samuel for me. So this is when it gets really, really interesting. So when the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice. So it's kind of interesting. You know, you can read all kind of commentaries about maybe this woman was like a a fraud, and she was used to just, you know, like, oh, I see, you know, your mother, and she wants to know if all the pottery's still good, or, you know, she might be used to just fooling people, and all of a sudden now this has really happened, or she's just overwhelmed by the fact that Samuel. So, you know, you can kind of read books and go either way. I kind of fall more in the she's just surprised that it really happened kind of category.
Really?
Well, I think that at this, I think she's surprised that it was Samuel. Like, I don't know if she was used to, like, you know, conjuring up some kind of spirit or something. But here all of a sudden, maybe she's used to talking to a particular spirit, if you believe, you know, that she really is a necromancer and she can divine spirits. Maybe you get a personal, you know, spirit that comes to you. So it's kind of fun. And then the next thing, so somehow in all this, and the woman said to Saul, why have you deceived me? You are Saul. So somehow, by seeing Samuel, she now realizes who's with her. And most of the commentaries, again, I try not to, you kind of dig into them a little bit, but most of them believe that they saw, she saw his mantle, that there was a mantle that the prophets wore, a special mantle, and when he came up, that he had this on, and that's how she recognized him, and by recognizing him, she's like, well, the only person who wanted to talk to him is Saul. So, that's for all that thing. And the king said to her, it's kind of interesting, it doesn't call him Saul there, it says, the king, do not be afraid, what do you see? And the woman said to Saul, I see a God, this is going to be, I'm going to get into this a little, coming up out of the earth. And what's really, really interesting here, if you'll remember, what did Samuel say to Saul when he ripped his garment? He said, you'll never see me again. So guess what? In this, Saul can't see him. She sees him. Saul, it never says Saul sees him. He keeps questioning her, is, what's he wearing? What's he doing? He never sees him. So it makes Samuel's prophecy is still coming true in that although he tried to conjure him up, he still doesn't get to see him. And he said to her, again, this will back that up. He said to her, what is his appearance? And she said, an old man is coming up and he is wrapped in a robe. And that wrapped in a robe, that, depending on the translations, that's that mantle that the prophets wore. And Saul knew that it was Samuel, and he bowed with his face to the ground and paid homage. So, again, really twisted. I mean, you violated all of God's laws, and now the guy's here, and you're going to pay homage to him. It's like kind of a strange, but again, I don't know what I would have done in the situation. I don't know. Hopefully, I wouldn't have got in that. But then Samuel said to Saul, why have you disturbed me by bringing me up? Saul answered, I am in great distress, for the Philistines are warring against me, and God has turned away from me and answers me no more, either by prophet or by dreams. Therefore, I have summoned you to tell me what I shall do. So, and Samuel said, why then do you ask me, since the Lord has turned from you and become your enemy? That is a devastating statement. I mean, that has to be a horrible thing to hear. But, you know, we are born enemies of God. And then, I guess through what Christ did, and you would think the guy that's leading God's chosen people, for him to become an enemy of God, that's a really, that had to be a devastating thing to hear. I know we've all realized that at some point in our lives that we were enemies to God and said, I don't want to be in that position anymore. You know, that's you know, that's bringing the weight of the universe on yourself and something even greater. The Lord has, and he continued, the Lord has done to you as he spoke by me, for the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor David, because you did not obey the voice of the Lord and did not carry out his fierce wrath against Amalek. Therefore, the Lord has done this thing to you this day. So, you know, kind of devastating news. I often, again, all the pieces are moving behind the scenes and everywhere they should the way they are. But you would have thought, you just wonder if Saul had realized he made the great mistake he made back then and had just said, okay, and shepherded David kind of into that position and showed him how, that maybe he could have just retired to his farm and, you know, his kids had gone on. I don't know. I mean, it's all just conjecture. You just wonder that if he had been more receptive and listened to God instead of, again, kicking at, God's going to get where he's going. When he says to you, David's going to be king, I don't know how you think you can change that. I mean, me personally, I wouldn't, but again, I've never been a king, so and I don't know how hard it is to try to hold on to that throne. I guess king of my own life, how's that? And I'd fight to get on that throne every once in a while.
When you said you're not king anymore?
Yeah. Or there came a time when I said, I don't want to be king, do this. So, we're going to, and again, this is a really weird, really kind of strange. I just, we'll step back for just a minute and just say, look, this isn't salvation worthy. It doesn't, but for me, it's kind of, you got saved and you can take the Bible on different levels, and there's nothing wrong with whatever level you're at, and that's where the Lord will meet you, and that will always. But just for me, I have questions about, when I come to this, I have questions about the afterlife, the things that are going on, and I think the Lord's willing to show you some of that. Again, there's a fine line between, you know, we've all seen people come to church with their pet theology, and they're just trying to beat people over the head with it, and then, you know, 2 months later. So when I first got saved, it was kind of this laughing in the spirit thing, if I remember
right.
It was this laughing in the spirit thing, and all these churches were falling down, rolling in the house and stuff, and we were like, what the heck? You know? And then it was the name it, claim it, blab it, grab it, kind of went around. And there's been... So there's been all these, like, you know, things that just flow through the church and just disrupt, and people become fixated on it, and it becomes their thing. So I don't want this to be a fixation, but I find it interesting, and this kind of stuff interests me in this book of the Bible. But just to show, I went and dug up Clark's commentary on this verse, and it said, I saw God descending out of the earth. The word Elohim, which we translate God, is the word which is used for the supreme being throughout the Bible, but all the versions, the Chaldee accepted, translated in the plural number as we do. So, although our biblical translators translated this God, it meant gods. And it means, from what I can understand, people that just don't, their abode is not in our realm. They live, and although God is an Elohim, he lives in that realm, he has a set of attributes, which Gary was kind of talking about, that nothing else created ever had, ever will have, ever. So there is one unique being that is Yahweh, that is God. But there are things that preside, I believe, and again, has nothing to do with your salvation, but there are things that preside in that realm, and I think that is the danger that the Lord's presenting here with this kind of stuff about the necromancers and stuff, and playing around in that realm, You were playing with beings that are way, way more powerful. And these things, it's kind of interesting to me, you know, just to get off on a little bit of a tangent. Like, these people think they're talking to people and they see their... We got to remember, these things have existed for eternity. Not for eternity, but for as long as mankind has been around. So, and I got news for you. You just watch it. If you watch history, there's nothing new. People do the same thing every time. And I just feel like these beings have been watching human beings for so many years, they can kind of predict what's going to stir you and what's going to make you... That, you know, people are chasing after fame. People are chasing after money. People are chasing after, you know, all kinds of, you know, things that just need to fill them. And I believe these beings are willing to deliver on that. If you're willing to open that doorway into that realm, and it just becomes a very, very dangerous game to play. But I think it's kind of, I've even heard it a lot of times that people say Elohim means God. And I just wanted to show you that. I mean, I went back, and I think we'll get some stuff from Darby, like some of the older translation. Yeah, that it just means a being that resides in a realm other than ours.
Yeah, our translation just says divine being. It doesn't say God.
Right.
In New American Standard.
Well, and mine says spirits.
Yeah, it says divine being.
So...
But here's the thing. So, the thing is, it is Samuel.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
It is Samuel, which is to me a little, I don't know, it's a little almost legitimizing spiritist mediums and stuff like that.
Well, I just think in this...
I would say, yeah, well, definitely.
Definitely. You know, those people can do some of that stuff, which is kind of what I was trying to touch on. But I think this is... He's on a divine mission from God.
Right.
I mean, anything could have showed up. But
I
in this...
I disagree. Like, they could do that. I don't know that mediums of any kind can raise people from the dead.
Dave, he's not risen from the dead.
Well, bring him back up from the ground. It says from the ground. It says he's coming out of the ground.
He brought me up, yeah.
But I don't. It was God who brought him. If God is that is, you know, I don't know that. I think there are things they're seeing, and there are deceiving spirits, blind spirits that are way out of our realm. And you think, I mean, you could think you're saying it looks just like, my, you know, who knows where this world's gone, that we all, what they can do with technology today. You think you're seeing something that isn't really there, you know.
But I think this is God inspired. I think God sent him on a mission. It's okay, you want to talk to a dead person. You wouldn't listen to him while he's alive. It's kind of the Lazarus syndrome. You know, okay, you're not going to listen to him while he's alive. Maybe you'll listen to him while he's dead.
And, say something.
Oh, Lord, yes.
This is the truth. I haven't told Scott. I told my sister, I think, because it's so unbelievable. But my son and his son were walking the dogs one night. And this man came towards him. They don't know where he came from. And just all of a sudden they saw him and he was walking towards him.
Mm-hmm.
He had on a coat and he had a big lump on his back. And he said to him, and Dustin was so glad Jack was with him because he can testify that what they saw was true. But this thing came towards them, and he said, "I am from the center of the earth, and you should call God Yahweh." And I forget what else the conversation was, but then the guy walked away, and they went on with the dogs, and he said he disappeared. That is the truth.
There are things out there that cannot be explained. And I guess the other side of that I was dwelling on this morning, not sure how to get. So understand that the early church fathers kind of thought some of this stuff was, for lack of a better term, unbelievable. And they tried to strip some of the supernatural out of Christianity. So it didn't seem... But, I mean, everything about Christianity is supernatural. We believe that a woman got pregnant by God as a virgin. You know, we believe that the Son of God came out and became a human being and walked this earth. I mean, we believe a lot of supernatural stuff. And if you're going to try to be a Christian just based on facts and logic, that ain't going to work. God many times says, hey, sit down, let's talk about this. I'm willing to reason with you to an extent. But the fact that you're talking to God is rather unusual, I would tend to think. But it's just a shame that, and what worries me, and I don't know, we're just like you were talking about the AI, and, you know, all of a sudden we have Congress testifying about aliens. People, this to me is part of, quote unquote, the lie that's coming. I'm not sure what it is. I don't know exactly what that is, but it is one big lie. It says the lie. And when we start, when the church tries to rely on logic, and we've pulled away from being able to deal with the supernatural, when supernatural things start happening around here, we're not going to have an answer for it. You know, to me, like all the UFOs and stuff, to me, I always think interdimensional beings. I just think people have opened up. Guys see this thing about this collider in, it's the Netherlands. Whatever, did anybody see that? So they're trying to shoot particles at each other, super collider, and they're not even sure what's going to happen, that it might open up. Uh-oh. Did the TV go off?
What's that?
There you go.
No.
No. So when your screen goes blank, it shuts.
It's still there. Supernatural stuff, see? We got to have an answer for it.
So what's weird to me is that God used a medium. I mean, that to me, it's just a little weird.
He talked to a donkey.
Because we're not supposed to be talking to mediums. My sister has gone to mediums, and they've told her things that, you know, and she believes and stuff like that. But I do think there are people who, you know, they're sensitive or gifted or something. That has to happen, but it's just me.
Well, Saul was the one who wanted to go see the medium,
and
God is using that because he went there and using it for his own purposes. It's not necessarily God uses evil people.
Yeah, he's going to bring purposes. He's bringing judgment on himself. Yeah. God said, "You do this, you're unclean."
He's going to be dead tomorrow.
I don't think we're going to be able to understand it. Period. Because we can only go by what the word says.
So,
and you have to be careful what you're adding into it. You know?
Yep.
Definitely, it was saying that was here. No possibility of demonic beings being conjured up.
No, because he knew he was wearing the mantle, and.
And it says it's Samuel.
Yeah.
It says
so.
That's who it is.
It sounded like Samuel.
And Samuel's a demonic.
At this point, yes.
He's an Elohim. He's just a being that resides in the other realm.
My New Living Translation says, in quote, small g, I see a God coming up out of the earth. What does he look like? He saw that. He's an old man wrapped in a robe.
Well, no, this is.
I mean, that seems like.
Okay, so, in Hebrews, what is an angel? What are angels?
Does it get?
Describe that. They are all ministering spirits.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. The term spirit, okay, so every human being on this earth is described as mankind. The only thing that's, everything in the spiritual world.
It's interesting that this would happen today. It's never.
There's about five or six different things as you go through the scriptures that are called Elohim, not just the God of the Bible, not the God that we worship. And so you have to, what's being said as you read through scripture a lot of times, it's not trying to say Samuel is God. Samuel is now in a place of the spiritual realm. So, he's bringing up the spirit. I don't understand it. Like, I can tell you this, as a young kid, you play with Ouija boards, you find stuff out. you mess around with stuff, you find stuff out. You play around. God, hey.
Open a door. You're opening a door.
And so there are spirit, the Lord wants us to understand that it's not a fleshly battle. It's a spiritual battle. Everything going on in our life, technically every one of you in here right now, are spiritual beings. Correct. Right. So it's a descriptive word of just saying this person is not of this realm. And so Elohim, El is the singular term. Elohim is plural. That's just the plural form of El. It's not giving him a, this is who we're going to worship. This is just saying this person is from another planet. It's an alien. The scriptures say we're aliens, right? Because we're not from this earth anymore. I understand. Yeah, but if you actually listen to those shows and different things, they actually say we've taken the Bible, we believe it, and we're just changing the terms so it's more understandable to people. So they're changing things. So it's not trying to diminish, but it's just trying to say cherubim, seraphim, sons of God, Satan, God himself,
archangels,
however you want to come on down, they are all considered one term, and that's Elohim, spiritual beings. We fight with it because the church has tried to take away from saying there's a real spiritual thing going on out there. They're spiritual beings, and they're called this. You name, and then some are described like God is, like there's no other one. He's not created. Everything else in heaven other than God, it has been created. And just like on the earth. So it's not trying to make it difficult, actually, but understanding that these guys, I don't even want to get into it, but I'm still trying to simplify so you understand so it doesn't freak you out.
And there's beings that are seeking your destruction.
Right.
And that's a hard...
Because,
you know, as we always have this element of compassion somehow, that it's hard... Maybe that's just me. I'd have a hard time thinking about a being that is so evil that they would want to destroy your soul. You know, you always think at some point you would have a little compassion... But these things are so evil and would seek to destroy your soul. And I think we kind of scare ourselves, or we kind of diminish things when we try to say, because like me, you hate to think about that. And you try to take the supernatural out of it, because then you can say, well, everybody, we're all children of God. We all come back. There's, you know, obviously we've learned about, there's some very bad people capable of very bad things. And, you know, we live in a fallen world, but there's just interactions between those worlds that, you know, that's what Eden was. That this was the point where heaven touched earth. And God ruled in Eden and heaven exactly the same. He just had a family at Eden. We are sons of man. Adam was a son of God. And all of that understanding, and that's what this kind of Elohim thing is, in the sense that all those beings are sons of God. They were never sons of man. So that's kind of the distinction in there. So the other thing I wanted to go on real kind of, since we're on this trail, we might as well go all the way down the rabbit hole. So I look up at Darby and it says, I found it interesting, and it says, the Darby version of the Bible, and it said, Jehovah said to Satan, this is back in Job, from whence comest thou? And Satan answered Jehovah and said, from going to and fro in the earth, from walking up and down in the earth. So you can go, more modern translations have taken out walking on the earth, but the older versions all say walking in the earth. And I just find that kind of interesting when we'll see. So Psalm 63:9 says, "But as for them who seek my life for ruin, they will go down to the depths of the earth." I wish you guys should have made that bigger, but I had to fit it on the page. But anybody wants to look that up, it's in this BibleKnowingJesus.com phrases, depth of the earth. So I did these little searches to try to see what. And in Exodus, this is kind of interesting because this is when some of the Israelites rebelled against Moses. And it says, "Thou stretchest out thy right hand, and in the earth swallowed them." So they went down into the earth. And so I think it's kind of interesting. And I went and found all these verses on the bottomless pit. So where would a bottomless pit be? If you went into the center of the earth, every direction is up. It's bottomless. Every direction you go is bottomless. So I feel, and then, so I have these verses, I'll go through them real quick. Psalm 140:10. "May he rain down fiery coals upon them, may he throw them into the fire. From the bottomless pits they will not escape." Luke 18:31, "He answered," and this is one we've just been through, "Legion, because many demons had gone into him. Then the demons began begging Jesus not to order them to go into the bottomless pit." Revelation 9:2-3, "And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven into the earth, and to him it was given the key of the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and there rose smoke out of the pit as the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke." Revelation 9:11, "And they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon, but in the Greek tongue he has the name Apollyon." Revelation 17:8, "The beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit, and they that go into perdition, and they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold beast that was and was not, and yet is to come." So there's a beast, and there's many things in Revelation coming out of the bottomless pit. And I thought it was kind of interesting that on all these verses, we see people either going down or coming up. Now, I'm not saying that Samuel's in this bottomless pit where these things are. But I think that has, there's a portion that has to do with, I think we're going. So, I have a real quick blurb here from the message, "The Rich Man and the Poor Man." And if you'll, I don't know, oh, there we go. And the question is, they call this a parable. They say the parable of the rich man and the poor man. But every other parable in the Bible, no names are given. So this has a name in it. So I think this,
it doesn't say in the parable.
This, well, in the Bible, in the scripture I was reading, and it says the parable of the rich man and the, you know, poor man. But it's kind of interesting. I believe this is a true story, and there's an illustration in there. That, so I guess I brought up these questions. We're kind of running out of time, so I'll go with, was heaven open to the saints? And if they're rhetorical, we can fight over them from now till Jesus comes back. But was heaven open to the saints before the cross? Because every other time David prays, you know, "Let not my soul go down into the abyss, la 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 la." The first time that it's ever said that you'll be in heaven is the thief on the cross. And Jesus said, "You'll be with me this day in heaven because of the cross." Up till that point, you're never, from then on, even Paul talks about, you know, to be absent from the body is to be with Christ. And I really believe that before the cross, because the cross had to be an event in time, the God of the universe stepped into human form, and one of the biggest things he did was make himself subject to time. And the cross had to happen in a date and a place in time. So all the people that died that were believers were just kind of held in a place and comforted until that cross. That's my personal belief. That isn't any, I think that's what this story kind of illustrates. It's kind of interesting. It's, I always think, is this where Jesus went for the 3 days? You know, for when he, because it says he went down for 3 days and preached. And it says, and it's kind of interesting in the story, it says the rich man is talking to Abraham and to Lazarus. He's saying, hey, can he put some water on his finger and touch my tongue? So he's aware of the beings that are there. There's an awareness there that goes beyond your physical body. And it's kind of interesting, throughout the story, at any point, the rich man, which we've all seen in court stories, every criminal thinks they're innocent. But in this story, he never protests about his innocence. He asks to be prophets, to be sent to his brothers. He asks all this. It's kind of interesting that he starts having compassion when it's a little late, but that's where it went. It was just some interesting points I wanted to bring up about. These are little glances behind the curtain of, again, you can take the Bible on, you know, I was just thinking, as a little kid, I remember, I grew up in this Baptist church, and all the books, and you see Goliath and David with the slingshot, and how, but, you know, as we're going to learn, David made a lot of mistakes, and there was no little books telling you about the thing with Bathsheba, right? You know, and I wasn't a Sunday school lesson for, you know, the 7th, 8th graders. So, it's kind of interesting, but the Lord will use David and Goliath and those little books for his, but he's also, if you're willing to step a little deeper, he's willing to answer those questions of your heart. And if it doesn't bother you and it doesn't affect you and it doesn't, again, I don't want to fight. There's no big theological fights over this. I just think it's something that interests me. And I think the Lord speaks to me at times in the sense that I'm always like, why this, Lord? And why? And it doesn't let my spirit just gloss over something and settle it. I, you know, sometimes you wish it did. But it's a fun part. I have my, Jacob thing, where there's times I just get to wrestle with God, you know, and I get, and every once in a while you have to break my hip and say, you know, limp on until I tell you what I'm going to tell you, you know? So that's just, you know, we'll continue on. We're going to see what's going to happen. Obviously, we see what's going to happen to Saul. But I just wanted to, you know, kind of fall off into that little caveat for a little while it was available for us. There's, you know, everybody can take that story to any extreme you want to. Again, you could go from, you know, it didn't really happen. She just, to, you know, you could make theology on it. And I wasn't doing that, but I think the Lord was willing to put it there. The Holy Spirit was willing to put it in that book, and he's okay with you talking about it. Again, he doesn't want it to twist you up and get you, you know, off of on a tangent, but he doesn't mind you looking into it, and I find it interesting. I find it really speaks to me in that sense. And that's what I was just illustrating. Abraham's bosom seems to have this gulf in the middle, but the people are aware of each other. And I just feel like at some point, once the cross happened, heaven was open to the saints at that point. Chris's beliefs. It doesn't affect anything.
Well, and that's why Jesus is the first fruits among the dead.
Mm-hmm. Right. And again, that was the first person that heard, today you'll be with me in paradise, was the thief on the cross. And, you know, a couple hours later, Jesus was dead. Anybody want to close with some prayer? I know that was off the rails. So.
No, and just there were two other cries that were brought up by the Lord Himself on the mountain.
Well, that's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. But maybe, yeah. Yes.
Just saying.
Yes.
Well, to me, though, that seems God brought them up.
Yep.
The thing the weird thing is that this, I mean, I guess God still brought sin.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, or allowed it, but I mean, it's just kind of weird that, like you said it interests you. Just kind of strange that God.
I think, well, it's in there, and it kind of helps to explain why in Leviticus and Deuteronomy the law is there.
Yes.
Because he's saying,
And
you're playing with things that should be nothing. And it's going to take you just down the evil way.
Right.
I think it's interesting that when Samuel does appear, what is his message for Saul? God said, don't do that.
He said, why have you bothered me? You know, he's like, I was comfortable, and now you call me back here.
And you're going to be dead tomorrow.
Yeah.
You and your son.
Well,
and the message
just to give you a thought to think about, with knowing that now, by the law, he's unclean and all this, but Samuel says to him, tomorrow you'll be with me.
We don't know what that means.
Like, that's an interesting, interesting thing.
Are you mad from Roman Rambo?
So, is he in Abraham's bosom where they can see each other, but he's, or is he, you know, because it's kind of interesting when you go through, as we've been through all those guys in the Old Testament, when you go through Hebrews 11 and see the people that are actually in the Hall of Faith, when you study their lives a little bit, you're like, but I think God's saying, hey, they didn't do it because of what they did. They're in because of what I did.
Right.
And that's what we have to rely on.
Yeah. Well, and I would think that as Samuel came up at this time, I don't believe it was the medium that did it. I do believe it was God. So it seems like the medium lady did it. Which, like I said, she probably could say, you know, like, oh, yes, Karen, your sister just wanted to see them and make anything up. And then she's like, holy cow, like, it never happened before. And so, although it seems like it was her, I think we're in God. So.
All right. Anybody want to volunteer to pray real quick?
I'll pray.
All right, Ann.
Jesus, we thank you, Lord, that your word is a treasure of seeing you. And as we see these different things come up, Lord God, I just thank you for Chris and his spirit and his curiosity into things that many people may just skip by, Lord God. It's something we just always be drawn close to you. That's the ultimate goal in all things as we come to your word. We ask you to bless this day, bless the message going out, bless our worship, and just be with all of our friends and family that we love.
So for me, seeing I understand what I've understood is kind of failing. And
Scott, do you have your computer? Do you want to put this on? I have it on.
Oh, you still been saving?
You want me to just, you're not worried about it anymore?
I'm fine.
Okay. I don't know.
So,
is that okay, Richard? We delved into some very, very deep stuff in the room.
Sometimes.